Climate change, spiralling food prices, the HIV/AIDS pandemic, and the need for better education to lift people out of poverty. Those are amongst the most pressing issues facing our planet today, and they're also the issues topping the agenda as leaders of the Group of Eight Wealthiest Nations meet for a summit in Japan next week. From July 7th to 9th, the prime ministers and presidents of the US, Canada, Britain, France, Germany, Japan, Italy and Russia meet amid tight security on the northern Japanese island of Hokkaido to discuss ways of bringing down soaring oil prices, getting the world's economy back on track and meeting the Millennium Development Goals of tackling poverty, illiteracy and disease, especially in Africa. Ahead of the summit, the heads of the Catholic bishops' conferences in those eight nations have written to their leaders, urging them to put national interests aside and focus on the need for concrete action to promote the common good, especially of the poorest nations of the world. The cardinals and bishops who signed the letter applaud the summit's focus on development and Africa and appeal to those world leaders to build on commitments made at previous summits in Germany last year and Gleneagles, Scotland in 2005.
So the letter is an attempt to follow up on last year, 2007, the same gathering of G8 countries.
Joseph Donnelly heads the Caritas Internationalis delegation at the UN in New York. He told my colleague Kelsey Brennan-Wessels more about the aims and the impact of this letter to the G8 leaders.
The Catholic bishops made visits to the respective counterparts in the governments to confirm for them their profound commitment to aid development and eradication of poverty, and to applaud efforts but also challenge that status. So this year's letter is an attempt to follow that up in a very concrete way and once again encourage the process, but also to say, you know, as the G8 approaches in Japan, that these commitments are radically important. And if we're going to reduce global poverty, address global climate change and all the multifaceted constituent impacts, it's now, it's not later, and it's in this dialogue and partnership now, and not just allocating some numbers and making some vague commitments, but in great specificity, and then in relationship to each other. That unilateral approaches just don't do this. It's all about partnership and delivery, and partnership on the basis of the local countries where the concerns are most dramatic.
What are they hoping to accomplish by sending this letter? What sort of outcome are they expecting?
Well, I think it's that's a good question, and I think it's a part of the challenge of partnership today is to say we're not merely commentators from sidelines, but that the faith-based community and the faith-based leadership is quintessential to the conversation in civil society, that part of the role of bishops in the world, their pastoral response is a human and a civil one as well for the community where they live and for the communities at large. So that sense of global citizenship is a fundamental gospel calling, and to be in solidarity with people in need. The sense of the letter is to say that these are fundamental realities for the church in action. And so concern for the poor, walking with the poor, is part and parcel of the daily life of the church in all its representative ways and places, from the grassroots up, from the top down, and vertically and horizontally, which creates this community of action. And that for us, the poor are real people, real names, real faces, real places. And the letter and the advocacy does confirm then for governments that this is not a capricious commentary, that we are integral players, stakeholders. And since the G8 countries themselves would each have religious and particularly Catholic representation, some, greater and lesser, but even, for example, Japan, where it'd be rather small, but it's respected and known, and that our commitment on the ground is with the poor and for the poor, and therefore the bishops would have a sense of responsibility to bring that voice there. And what I understand is that it has even more traction and credibility precisely because it comes from the ground up. It's based on connections to the local bishops' conferences all over the world on these human social needs that can't be addressed independently and must be addressed collectively. So I believe that the letters and the messages are taken quite seriously, and I think it also demonstrates then that we have a sense, the church has a sense of partnership with all people involved in civil society and with the government, so that to be out of the conversation could be to miss an opportunity to comment. And since the church delivers so profoundly on so many humanitarian needs, for example, like HIV/AIDS, poverty eradication, health clinics, schools, it's indisputable that we're there. And that does resonate with governments.
Now, is there any particular need that is of more importance than the other ones that the Catholic Bishops Conference would like the G8 to focus on in particular?
Well, I think at the moment, one of the ones that jumps out at people is the global food crisis. And how do we get to that situation? Some would say it isn't a food crisis, it's an economic crisis, it's a food resource crisis. So the issue is people are hungry, and certainly we know that people are starving. How is that happening? And people are dying. What can be done to prevent that? And so, yes, we could quickly rally up and get food into the hands and homes of certain, you know, desperate communities. But if that's a one-off deal, it doesn't have any sustainable value to anyone. What are the deeper issues? So I think that things like agriculture and the climate change challenge, all these things question how are we managing the resources we have, and certainly from a faith and ethics point of view, what is our sense of stewardship and accountability to, first of all, benefit the people where these natural resources exist? You know, is there food security in the country? If there isn't, why? If there are great natural resources in a country, but they're exploited by others, what then are the consequences locally? If all of that stirs up crisis, then it means that all these, the integration of a quality of life and sustaining honest, authentic community are fractured by all the impacts that take away from concentrating development resources, development expertise in the places where people are in need. So there is a challenge here. And I think it is the great concern of the bishops in their statement is to say, are we making the most of what we have? Are we including the local people in that conversation? And it's not enough to make, you know, bold commitments from rich countries without a sense of how will this happen. So I think the overriding concern for the bishops, whichever side you come into the perspective of needs, is it effective? And are these commitments being implemented when they've come as government commitments, and are they being monitored so that it isn't a one-size-fits-all or a one-time-only response, but an ongoing, evolving, really integrated approach to development and its effectiveness that also has an ownership locally, not just by the local community's need, but by the local governments as well. So the bilateral relationships between, you know, a country with a population in need or an economy in need and donor countries who support it, it has to be really still integrated and not private deals on the sidelines of the what's best for the local society.
Is there any particular need that has made significant progress in the past few years?
I'm reluctant to say any have made significant progress, maybe as more one than the other. I think that there has been, you know, attention on HIV/AIDS. There has been attention on climate change. The problem is there's been the variations of progress, and in quotes, I would say success make for small success stories and small pockets of development. But collectively, the problem remains the same, and there's so many variables that go into altering the possibility of progress, that the fear here, and I think this would be the overriding challenge, is that while commitments were made, there have been ships in that commitment, and government commitments to overseas disaster assistance, called ODA, has changed enough that some countries have slipped back, and there's a real challenge to say, where does that come from? You may see shortly there is a secular press story getting out in the last today or next days of G8 leaders ready to backtrack on Africa aid. And the question is to say, are the pledges that are made, are they slipping? And I think one of the things that, if we're trying to help Catholic audience as well to hear this, is to say some of the numbers, you know, are so enormous, $25 billion, $50 billion. They're so large that they could seem like they're incredible investments, but if they're not really related to specific places and needs, people don't understand the impact that they can have or that's lost if they shift those amounts of investment. The way I try to reflect on it is to say, you know, we have this, the needs to eradicate poverty. We have health. We have education. You know, we have HIV/AIDS. We have climate change. How do we sustain those commitments while we're learning more and moving into new directions and new understanding of needs if the funds that we appropriated to column A are now cut in half and part of that is put in column, you know, D, but it's less money, it's not more money, but then we make an announcement that we've pledged X amount of money to column D when really what we've done is take half of it from another dramatic need. So part of the G8 call to action from the bishops and others, from ourselves, is to ask the question that we not change the paradigm here. We just state quite practically, here's the basic needs. Here's what absolutely is needed to begin to have a sustainable, progressive response to the need. And when we add things to the column of needs, which is life, you know, it's inevitable, that we're not taking the resources or the commitment from one already pledged commitment and now reallocating that. That's obviously pretty dangerous and leads to more disastrous consequences in the development world. And the challenge that we, as part of civil society, are presenting is to keep on track and to find an ownership and accountability also at the local level, that the local governments and countries in need are also honest and transparent in their response to what can we do with this, and not simply kind of a quick take the money and run or simplistic approaches. That's really not going to help anybody. And in the end, the poor remain poor. So I think one of the challenges of the question of where's the progress made is the progress for us would be made if the commitments that are there are sustained, acted upon, and in a transparent way reflected on where there are variations, which would be inevitable because it's human and it's life, but that it isn't a slip sliding backwards subtly and maybe getting obfuscated by big numbers and not really sort of speaking truth to reality.
There to Joseph Donnelly, head of the Caritas Internationalis delegation at the United Nations in New York. He'll be one of those following very closely the working of the G8 summit in Japan next week. And he was speaking to my colleague Kelsey Brennan-Wessels.